Hello, and welcome to the Mail Report on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I am Bob Retall.
In this episode, we'll be discussing the top 300 comics sold through Diamond to retailers for the month. Alright, the numbers we're going to be talking about are the top 300 comics for November 2008, as reported by Diamond, and this is what they've sold to retailers for the month in question. The breakdown, really, you know, it's getting to be kind of standard. Marvel on top, this time with just under 47% of the total units sold for the top 300, followed by DC with 36.79%, so a little over a 10% gap there. And then we got Image and Dark Horse kind of in that middle tier, with IDW actually doing pretty good. I mean, Dark Horse had 4.36%, Image had 3.63%, and IDW with 2.73%. And then the only other one with above a percent of the total sales of the top 300 was Dynamite with 1.62%. Everybody else under half a percent of the total aggregate sales for the top 300.
I mean, that's somewhat a standard distribution, though, right?
Yeah, very much so. Again, you've got the top two, Marvel and DC. You've got kind of that middle tier. Now, it used to be, and when I say used to be, I'm talking back, you know, 5-6 years ago when we had CrossGen and some companies like that, where that middle tier, which is currently Dark Horse, Image, IDW, and Dynamite, was kind of, I would define that as the 5% and over, but not the, you know, 30-40% kind of a thing. And then back then, you know, Marvel and DC had lower percentages too. But kind of clearly above that 5%, normally this would be, you know, that Image, the Dark Horse, CrossGen coming in just below that 5%. But now we've gotten to where the main two publishers are so dominant that even these, you know, kind of what I refer to as the minor league publishers, with DC and Marvel being the major leagues and everyone else kind of being the farm teams, if you will, are under that 5% mark. Now, 5% mark is only relevant in so much as it was rumored around the time CrossGen was around that they had to get over that 5% to get into the front half of previews. Now, that was a rumor. It was never really confirmed or whatever. But, you know, at that point, obviously, Dark Horse and Image had over that.
What were the total sales back then? I mean, how many books was somebody selling approximately to be at 5% of the market?
That is a really good question. I don't have it broken down by all of the individual publishers, but if you go to the spreadsheet I sent you to a couple of pages to the left, to the comics breakdown history, what I've got is for every year and month going back to the beginning of the final order period, which is February 2003, I've got the sales broken out for Marvel, DC, and everybody else. And at some point, maybe I'll add, you know, Image and Dark Horse and a few of these. And if you look at it, you can see how, you know, there has been some upswing in how many units, you know, DC is selling and so forth, but not radically. So, somewhere in here I also have the total units, which is over in column X, and, you know, back in February 2003, it was 5,863,562, so we'll say 9 million, roughly, and it's, for this month, at 5,765,097, so we'll say 5.8 million. So, I mean, we're talking, in a lot of cases, within the ballpark. There are certainly a couple of months that have had some huge total sales, and a couple of months that it's been a lot lower. A few times where it's actually dipped below 5 million units for the month, for the top 300, again. So, it's not a matter of more units necessarily getting sold, making the difference, but you look at this month versus last, again, this month we're at the 5.7, 5.8 million. Last month it was 7.5 million. Now there are a lot of things that kind of account for that, and part of that is a number of titles that shipped last month that just didn't ship this month.
Right.
Examples of that near the top of the list are, you know, obviously Final Crisis and Secret Invasion didn't ship. Those right there are top two books.
Right.
Other ones we've got near the top of the list are Justice League did not ship. We do have the Justice Society. Do we have, we do have Detective, but it's down a little ways. Legion of Three Worlds did not ship. I'm not seeing Green Lantern for this month. That, I guess that didn't ship either. Final Crisis Submit. Actually, I'm looking at just DC. Hang on. Let me filter this to everything and just start at the top again. So, no Secret Invasion, no Final Crisis. We do have Hulk. We do have Batman. No New Avengers, no Mighty Avengers, no Astonishing X-Men. Obviously, we've got Amazing Spider-Man, though. We do have Uncanny X-Men and no Justice League. That was the top 10 in order from last month. So you start taking out a lot of the big dogs and, you know, you're going to start losing some major sales. Now, the other thing that differentiated this month from last is if you look at the bottom of both months, the lowest ranked item for November sold 2,228 estimated units, whereas in October, the bottom of the list was around 4,230 units. So about 2,000 units difference. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's everything at the bottom, you know, right there. So that starts to add up too. So in many respects, this was kind of a lackluster month in terms of the sales, just overall, for the comics.
Right.
The only two that made it over 100,000 for November were Ultimatum number 1 and Batman 681. Batman 681 being the finale of the Batman RIP stuff. So yeah, that would explain part of the bump there. Actually, not a bump. It was actually down almost 800 units. It was down 792 units, or about 0.75% from the previous issue, which is interesting if you compare that to the final issue of the Hush storyline in Batman way back when, where 619, I believe, was the final issue of that. That was one of the big spikes on the sales. Now, part of it, variant covers, last time we were going to see Jim Lee on Batman for a while, that kind of a thing. The fact that this actually went down a little for the conclusion of the Batman RIP storyline, I think, is interesting. And by interesting, I mean not a good sign. So I know we sometimes get chided a little for nebulous terms like interesting, which, yeah, fair cop. Hulk is down nearly 20,000. It's down 19,487 units. That's a...
Which is very interesting, just in that this we haven't even gotten hit by the cover price increase on it yet.
I see this as akin to a second issue drop, because we finished that first story arc with issue 6. 7 would have been the first of the Art Adam Frank Cho ones. 8 would be the second. So, you know, we kind of get that trend going. And if we look at the sales history, issue 7 was actually down about 7,500 from issue 6. And this, again, the nearly 1,900. So we didn't even see a bump on issue 7. We did see it on issue 6, though. But that was one that had the variant covers and was supposed to be the reveal of who the Red Hulk is or something like that, wasn't it?
Yes. I read it, and I'm not remembering if they did reveal who the Red Hulk was. Which, I don't know, I remember liking the art in it, and how memorable the story was, I guess, is indicated by that.
I'm thinking they may have, and I'm thinking I may know who it is, but I'd have to reread it to be sure. The Hulk is doing much better than I would expect. The fact that, you know, really up until this issue, it was over 100,000 for the run surprises me. The demand for the back issues, as witnessed by the price over on mycomicshop.com, amazes me.
Uh-huh.
You know, particularly with this many copies out there, it's much more successful than I can explain. Because, I mean, some of the reviews I'm reading, certainly what you think of it, what I think of it, you know, a lot of people are not thinking very highly of it, yet it's selling gangbusters.
Well, you know, the Hulk thing, they have, the Hulk to me is like that summer popcorn movie, what they're doing with it. Because you look at each issue that's come out, and for the most part, they've had, you know, Hulk fighting Thor, Hulk fighting Iron Man, Hulk fighting the other Hulk, you know. And it's just been very big, splashy stories with lots of action, not a lot of depth to it, but entertaining in its own right. I mean, I've read through a lot of the issues. I don't remember in depth, like I said, you know, what was going on necessarily. But, you know, they are entertaining the same way that going to see the Transformers movie by Michael Bay is, or any Michael Bay movie really, is entertaining. And I think people like that, and that contributes a lot to, you know, you don't have to think about it too much, you know, is the basic thing. You know, if you look on the flip side, Final Crisis, where you have to, you know, really sit down and concentrate really hard to have, you know, an idea of what's going on, the Hulk, you can just kind of sit back and let it wash over you and be entertained. And I think that resonates.
I think the same could be said for Batman, which, you know, in this month outsold Hulk by, you know, 12,000 units or so.
I think Batman is helped by the, this was this, where did this fall in the RIP storyline? Was this the first piece?
This was the conclusion of it.
Conclusion of it. See, there you go. I mean, I think there it's just you have orders because it's people want to see what's going on.
Yeah.
You know, the final part of RIP, you know, and this is, again, it's how many did comic shops order, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now you see the final piece of RIP, it's like, oh, is Batman going to die? You know, I don't want to miss out on that. There could be a demand for it. Look at what happened when Captain America died.
Yeah, but these orders were down by, you know, 800 units. Now, granted, it was a little more expensive by a dollar or whatever, and I'm sure that factored in some, too.
I'm looking at it. It's down by 800 units, but it's up from where Batman usually is, right? I mean, in general. If you go back to before RIP.
Oh, yeah. If you go back to before RIP, it was down at the 70, you know, 80,000 mark, sometimes even a little below.
I look at it as, you know, only losing 800 units is kind of in the noise for an issue-to-issue drop.
True, but it was also the lowest selling issue of Batman RIP, which implies the potential lack of resonance with the readers there. Because again, these retailers are not ordering in a vacuum. You know, they're paying attention to what their customers are buying, what their customers are talking about, not talking about, what they're liking and not liking. Now, they're doing this to varying degrees of accuracy and sophistication. Some are doing it on gut feeling. Some are doing it based on, you know, what their POS system tells them. Some on both. And it's certainly an imperfect system. But, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, I look at these numbers and it implies to me that, sure, Batman RIP is selling better than the average Batman story has for a while, but they also hype the hell out of it. Ooh, it's going to be the end of Batman. I mean, it's going to sell better regardless.
Right.
Whereas I look at the Hulk, and this is the first issue out of the run that, again, is under 100,000. They've put some marketing behind it, certainly, but it's not, oh, this is going to be the end of the Hulk, etc. I certainly see your point that Hulk, summer blockbuster movie, Batman, more of a mystery story, a different audience, different expectations for the two. But, I don't know, it just seems a little bit like a mixed message.
Well, I think the Hulk is, you know, my Hulk thing is maybe, I'm saying that's why the Hulk was popular in general, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I think that even then, if you put out a Transformers movie every 6 months, you know, it wouldn't be making the same kind of money by the time you got the fifth one.
Yeah.
Right. And where the Hulk started out making just gigantic numbers, it's been sliding issue over issue because, I mean, that kind of storytelling, it tends to get a little bit old over the course of time.
If you look, though, at the sales, it started at 139,827, which, good, solid first issue numbers. Amazing, really. But then it quickly went down to about 101,000, 101,534 to be exact, for an estimate again when I say that, because these are going to be off by a handful of issues either way, what have you. But then it stayed right around that 101,000 point with issue 3, with issue 4, with issue 5. Issue 6, it spiked back up to 117,775. 7, it dropped to about 110,000 and now down to 90,000. So for that first arc of 1 through 6, right there in the middle, aside from the bookend, beginning and end, it was really consistent. So it's not like it was a roller coaster ride that people just got tired of and kept dropping off. It's like, oh, I've seen the fight.
Yeah.
You know? And when you consider the change in art, the change in the story style to the split format for 7 and 8, you know, I can see where the drop might come from.
No, you got a point. I mean, it's like, I don't know the answer, you know, it's just...
Well, and that essentially was my point, too.
Yeah.
This is a series where the sales are defying my expectations, both with how high it started out and how high it remains. Typically, by this far into a series, things would be much, much lower down. The last series that started kind of this strong from Marvel, I would say, was Thor.
Well, I mean, we're talking about Hulk on our back issue thing on the forum also, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's just, you know, this is the kind of book that right now the back issues of issue 1, 2, 3, 4, they're relatively pricey. I mean, and, you know, by that I mean they're, you know, like $6 to $10 or so a piece. You know, not, you know, going to bust your wallet or anything, but, you know, certainly more than most normal back issues run for from the last couple of months. And I made the point, I think, that it defies explanation in that every one of those issues had over 100,000 copies kicking around out there.
Yeah.
So, you know, in the fullness of time, you know, which may be years, I believe that is going to drop, you know, back down to normal pricing. But like right now, because the Hulk series is popular, and, you know, realistically, if this slide continues, and I'd be really curious to see, you know, this is issue 8. What issue is it going to $3.99 with? 10, maybe?
Yeah, I think 10.
Anyway, I'd just be really curious to see how this slide is going to be affected by the, you know, 33% increase in cover price.
Yeah, I would think it's going to probably accelerate it, but the question then becomes, does the price increase offset the acceleration or not?
Right. Well, again, you know, and that was the kind of thing where, you know, if you go up that much, you would have to lose 30,000 or so copies for them to be making less retail dollars, probably less for them to be making, you know, half as much for them to be making less money, you know, but still they'd have to drop 15,000-20,000 for it to prove to them to be a faulty decision.
Yeah, and, you know, they just lost, you know, over 19,000 on this issue, so
yep.
All things are possible.
It's possible. You know, it's like if the Hulk actually ends up by issue 11 or 12 down around 40,000, then, you know, that's something to think about.
Yeah. Well, for comparison, Thor started out at 196,807, and by issue 8, it was down to 91,958, so it had dropped by half. Now, granted, that first issue sold outrageously well, and by the second issue, it was already down to 122,945 units. And that was one that, by and large, with the exception of a spike on the fourth issue, had been consistently dropping from issue to issue. So we're seeing a different trend here on the Hulk, and it will be interesting how that price change factors in, as well as the split format going back to, I guess, Ed McGuinness art and things of that nature.
And it's hard to tell on Thor because the actual title comes out so inconsistently. But, you know, they're doing the same thing. They're jacking the price of the regular issues on that up with issue 601. I think issue 13 is going to be called issue 600, and then they're keeping that numbering, you know, going back to the original numbering.
I hate it when they do that.
Yeah. Which isn't really, you know, indicative since Thor actually started in Journey into Mystery 83, so, you know, there have not been 600 issues of Thor, no matter what you do with it. But, you know, they're going up to $3.99 an issue on that one, too. So I'm just, you know, that's been all over the internet. And I don't know how much that hits normal people who don't prowl around on the internet. You know, you have always, oh, yeah, well, you got the very vocal minority of internet people. But, you know, the people who aren't on the internet and they don't read the news and things like that about comics and just get them as they come out in the shops, I mean, those people are just going to get the sticker shock when they walk up to the register with their stack of comics and find that some of them are costing a dollar more. And what's going to happen? Are they going to, you know, if they don't have the money or don't want to pay it, are they going to put some things back on the rack?
I would hope that retailers are kind of prepping their customers for this, but I kind of doubt they are. Because, I mean, I'm curious how many comic fans are unaware of the price hike. I think it's getting enough talk. I certainly don't think everyone's posting on the internet and stuff, but I think a lot more people are reading than posting. But to be unaware of it, you would have to not be reading any of the comic book websites, not listening to any of the podcasts, not checking out previews, which, again, totally possible.
I think that describes a fair number of people. Now, those people do go to their local shops. So to your point, it's how much is a shop owner saying, oh, by the way, I see you like, you know, hey, Bill or whatever, you know, I see you like Thor and the Hulk. Just a heads up, you know, 2 months from now, they're going to be costing $3.99 an issue or something.
It just seems to be totally unaware of it. Not only do you have to not be checking all those things, you have to not be in contact with a lot of people who are.
Yeah. Well, I certainly don't hang around in comic shops, so I don't know what kind of counter chat is happening in the shop. So that'd actually be interesting to me. Any of our listeners who are out at the local comic shops on a Wednesday or a Saturday or whatever like that, and you stand around and chat, drop us a line at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you've heard, or go out to the forums and post something. Well, you know, either one, but just let us know what you've been hearing out at the shops about the price increase, because I know what's on the internet. You know, that's easy to look up. I want to know what people are actually saying out in the shops about this.
Yeah, I agree with that entirely, and I would expand it beyond just the price hike. But, you know, when you're at the store picking up your new comics, what are people talking about? Are they talking about how things are selling, what they're liking, what they're not liking, how much they're paying, how much they're not paying, you know, what titles they want to be getting but can't afford, what titles they're dropping because they don't like, you know, what is the buzz at the comic shops? I think that would be very interesting to factor in. Are people saying, wow, Hulk is brilliant and so forth? Or are they getting it just because they like the action, or are they not talking about it at all? I definitely think that would be very informative. What else do we want to talk about in here? We've got tons of stuff. That JSA Kingdom Come special did fairly well for the Superman one at 72,856. That was the Alex Ross one.
That's really not surprising, you know, when Alex Ross does an entire issue.
Oh, yeah.
I read somewhere that was another thing, you know, it's like somebody made the point, and I apologize, I forget who, and I don't remember where I saw it on the internet, but, you know, some of these really good artists who do covers a lot, and they mostly just pimp them around putting their covers on books to sell a book that has somewhat different interior art. That would be like, I would like to see more comics that have covers by the interior artist, that, you know, the cover is indicative of what you're getting if you buy that issue.
That was brought up in the What Would You Do If You Were the Marvel Editor-in-Chief thread on our forum.
Yeah.
That Dennis started.
Okay, yeah.
I forget who made that comment, though, because somebody made the comment of, I'd rather see a full comic by somebody than 22 covers they've done.
Exactly, and that's, I think, this Kingdom Come Superman special was that way. That was a fabulous issue that kind of told behind the, or in between the panels, story about the death of Lois Lane from the Kingdom Come story, that, you know, it was so nice seeing Alex Ross doing the continuity instead of just a bunch of pinups that you usually see him doing.
Yeah. Seeing the storytelling and stuff was cool.
And he does that really well.
Well, and then you look at the other two JSA Kingdom Come specials for Kingdom and Magog, and they're down at 57,200 for Kingdom and 55,550 for Magog.
Which is actually relatively credible. I mean, given that they're not by Alex Ross, you know, less of a drop-off than there potentially could have been.
But what's interesting is these all kind of happen between issues of JSA, and Justice Society of America itself, issue 20, did 71,350 units, which is a little below that Superman special that Alex Ross did, but well above the other two. You know, again, people are kind of skipping parts of the story, which these are tangential enough that I can see that. You know, it's not like chapter 1, 2, and 3 kind of a deal. Another thing that is interesting is Buffy made it back into the top 10. It's down in slot 8. Or up in slot 8, depending on your perspective, but it's down to 74,197 units. That's about a 33 3,400 unit drop, but still by far the top selling non-Marvel and DC title by a wide margin.
Right.
Now you wanted to talk about Final Crisis, and we've got Final Crisis Resist in slot 21 with the first and I guess only issue of that at 56,921 units.
Is Submit on here somewhere?
Submit was last month and it did 57,483 units.
This is not the first time that there's been a month without a Final Crisis in it.
Correct.
It just seems like that would, you know, having a consistent shipping schedule for a major book like that would be nice. There's been talk on, and we don't have a regular issue of Final Crisis here, but there was a thread on the forum also where somebody mentioned the fact that it was probably, you know, more of a New God story and the return of the New Gods than a crisis-like event. And you mentioned that before.
We've talked about that. Oh, yeah. And there was talk on that thread on how, you know, a lot of people are confused and bewildered by it. And, I mean, I would certainly put myself kind of in that category in so much as I understand the events that are happening, by and large, in each issue. I just don't understand the sequencing of them and the why they're happening and more why I should care.
Well, one of the things that was brought up there was that there seems to be a tie-in to some of the stuff from Seven Soldiers.
Specifically Mr. Miracle.
Exactly, which I never read.
That's going back, what, 2-3 years?
Yeah, and, you know, that's the kind of thing where you have a major event and, you know, okay, well, if you read this, you know, particular miniseries a couple of years ago, it'll help you understand. Well, that's just poorly thought out as something that's necessary to understand a major event, in my opinion.
Oh, I agree entirely, having read those series.
I think this is much more suited to Morrison fans than to general DC fans. Because a lot of people who aren't understanding it, who don't read lots of comics, they make the general statement of, well, you need to have a degree of DC Universe philosophy and have been reading DC for 20 years to understand it. And I disagree because I have been reading DC for 20 years and I still don't understand it. I think it's more specifically, you need to be really in tune with Morrison's storytelling style and have been a Morrison fan and reading a lot of his work. And that will help you understand it tremendously. You know, and I'm not a big Morrison aficionado. I mean, I appreciate some of the stuff he does, but it's more like hit or miss with me. Some of his more intricate works like this, they just, you know, sail right over my head.
Well, I mean, I've been reading the overwhelming majority of the DC Universe titles since well before Crisis on Infinite Earth. So using Crisis as the cutoff point or starting point for this current continuity, I'm going to say I've read well over 90%, possibly over 95%. I mean, I'd have to have a list of what counts as continuity to compare that to what I've got and I've read to know for sure. So I've got that background. I certainly don't memorize these comics, but, you know, I've read them and understood the majority of them. Certainly with the Grant Morrison stuff, sometimes maybe not so much. I've read all the Seven Soldiers stuff, but it's a matter, like you're saying, of accessibility of storytelling. And if the spin-offs from the JSA storyline is getting more buzz, more hit than the spin-off for the major event title for DC, something's not right there. You know?
Yeah. And personally, I skipped Submit and Resist. And I thought, okay, you know, if I start hearing a buzz like, you know, these are the greatest things ever, I can always go out and pick them up. And, well, that didn't happen.
No, both were tangential and I don't think relevant to the overall storyline. Or at least, I don't say not relevant. They're relevant, but not...
And not essential.
Not essential. The Submit one was more or less covered in a line or two of dialogue in Final Crisis after that. And Resist, I mean, yeah, more or less the same thing.
Yeah, but, you know, and lest we be accused of DC bashing here, I mean, you look right over at Marvel and, you know, they drop the ball on getting any kind of Civil War-centric stuff out.
Secret Invasion, you mean, not Civil War.
Yes, I do mean Secret Invasion. They blur together in my mind.
They do have a Secret Invasion X-Men number 4, and it's way down in slot 32 with 46,989 units, so just under 47,000 units.
Interesting, because, you know, I think people have started burning out on all the side series, and we mentioned this on the Weekly Spotlight. I actually found the the X-Men Secret Invasion mini to be more satisfying and have a better conclusion than the main Secret Invasion series.
Yeah, I agree with that entirely. This is one that undersold.
And it's X-Men. And it's sold down there. And it's just, that's got to be a reaction of some sort.
Well, I think it's a reaction to two things. Too many Secret Invasion miniseries, and too much X-Men. I mean, we've got Uncanny. In many months, we have Astonishing. We also have X-Men Legacy. This is a side story that, you know, most people figured didn't matter.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I can't totally fault them for that. Now, one thing that's interesting is we've got a couple issues of Trinity, as we do every month, for the duration of this weekly series. It's now down in ranks 35, 36, 38, and 40, with issues 23, 24, 25, and 26, respectively, which sold 44,968 units for issue 23. It dropped by 475 to 44,493 with 24, dropped another 691 units down to 43,802 units with 25, and then on issue 26, it dropped another 598 units down to 43,204 units. And This is actually kind of how I was afraid 52 was going to do to begin with. I just, at that point, was not convinced a weekly series could sustain itself. And this one only started at 70,000, 70,400 or so, actually. So while it's down considerably, and certainly I would not say, you know, doing brilliantly, it's not doing that bad. It's well within the top 50. It squeaked into the top 40. But, I mean, by the time it's over, it'll probably be, you know, down even further. Because we're seeing a fairly consistent drop of, you know, 500, 600, 700 units an issue, it seems like. And that kind of attrition takes its toll, particularly on a weekly series.
It always interests me on these weekly series, and Spider-Man was kind of the same way, that, we saw it in Countdown and the other ones, but, like, the first one of the month always has a bigger drop, and then the other ones have smaller drops. Not all, I'm sure it's not completely always, but, you know.
That was the main standard we saw. With the Spider-Man, it was a little different because they often did additional covers on the first issue of the month, making it seem to spike. But I think what we're seeing is an artifact of the ordering process, in so much as when the retailers are putting together the order for this batch, because all of these were done through the September previews catalog, they're saying, okay, based on what I know on how Trinity is selling now, I need to adjust by X amount. Obviously, this is accounting for that major drop at the beginning. Then they're having to guesstimate how much more it's going to drop over that month that they're ordering. So they're saying, well, it's going to drop a little, or whatever. And that's conjecture based on them. But by the time they make that next order, be it for October, if we go back a month from August, September and stuff, they now have a month of data that they didn't have before to be basing that on. That's why we're seeing those bigger adjustments. Those are the adjustments based more on fact and information versus speculative guessing on how it's going to do during the month. Does that make sense?
Yeah, somewhat. I mean, especially in the context of if you have a retailer that's utilizing the final order cutoff to really manage their business appropriately.
I would say this is more a case of them not, by and large. Because if you did it with the final order cutoff date, you would be able to have less of a change from issue to issue, regardless of when in the order cycle they happened. Therefore, there shouldn't be a big jump at the beginning of every batch of issues.
Well, no, I agree with that. I'm just saying it's like if you look at the numbers as an average, it could be that there's a, you know, some number of retailers that are doing it that way intelligently, but then there's others that are just kind of winging it. And it, you know, since you can't get any kind of consistent data like this, it kind of skews out a little bit.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, there are going to be some that are managing it better than others, some that are using the final order cutoff date and others that are not. But I think we've got almost a 3-to-1, 4-to-1 ratio. But yeah, about a 3 or 4-to-1 delta in the drop between the first issue of the month and the other ones. So that implies potentially only a quarter of the retailers are really taking full advantage of the final order cutoff date for Trinity and able to either adjust their orders as they're going that way, or just doing a better job, you know, guesstimating. But we really can't tell for sure based on this. It could just be that, you know, at the beginning of every month, people are saying, well, based on how it's selling now, let's make a major adjustment and then tweak a little, you know, for how we think it'll do during the month.
Yeah, it could be just holding their finger out in the wind for all we know.
Well, and part of it with this is we're dealing with a crowd of retailers. You know, we can't say that this is what retailers are doing because not all retailers are doing the same thing. You talk to any one retailer, it doesn't matter how brilliant they may be, that's not going to give you a view of the industry. It's not going to give you a view of how all the retailers are thinking. There are a lot of retailers that constantly butt heads because they have fundamentally different views on how to order comics, how to sell comics, etc. And that's good for the industry. But what we're looking at with this data is kind of the wisdom of that crowd, if you will, insomuch as the errors for any one particular retailer are, in theory, going to get kind of overwhelmed or averaged in with both the errors and the intelligence of all of the other retailers. So I think this gives us a better sense of really how these comics are selling kind of across the board, even down to the reader level, than asking any particular retailer. You know, I think it's interesting that we're getting that bump at the or drop bigger at the beginning of every month and stuff. And I do think that's an artifact of the ordering process. I am curious how much the final order cutoff plays into that.
I agree with you, though, that if by and large, if retailers were taking advantage of the final order cutoff, you should not see that big of a difference.
Yeah.
Because I don't think customers are dropping it in patterns similar to what we would see, what we would be led to believe by looking at these numbers.
Well, you know, actually, that's a very interesting question because it begs the question of what percentage of the readers out there are pre-ordering their comics and essentially ordering as if they were a comic store in terms of a theoretical non-returnable basis, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, obviously, if you've got a pull list with a store, depending on the policy of the store, up until the minute it comes out, you could say, hey, I don't want that, whatever. But, I mean, we order through DCBS, so we did pre-order our comics. So at the beginning of a new order form, you may have said, and I know you did for a particular month, not September, I believe it was August, where you said, okay, no more. And you drew a line in the sand and said, that's it. So it's a question of how many readers are actually doing that. It could be that as an artifact of the ordering process, as even down to the reader level, there actually is a bigger drop at the beginning of the month. I certainly don't think it would be this big, but it is possible that it would be a bigger spike than the other issues.
Well, interestingly, I mean, the way I made it, my decision, which isn't, you know, how everybody would make their decision, but since they tend to do the covers on Trinity in triplets,
yeah,
you know, where each three issues kind of stick together to form a particular image,
mm-hmm.
I stopped at one of those boundaries. So, you know, for me, that means that I think my last issue was 18. But, you know, if I was going here, my last issue would have been either 21 or 24. Certainly not a drop off with my last issue being 23, which, you know, had the bigger drop off here than the others.
Right, right. Whereas if I look at last month's data for October, 18 had the big, you know, drop of 2135, and 19, 20, 21, and 22 were all around the 600 mark. If people were dropping it based on that, you know, the end of a set of three, I would have expected 19 to have had a bigger dip than the other issues.
You know, that's the way I did it, but I'm under no delusion that most.
Yes, most, but I do think that was something that factored in. If you're dropping a title, you want to find a nice cutoff point, and when you've got batches of three covers that line up, that, for some people, is a reasonable thing to say, oh, I'll finish that cover set.
Yeah.
Let's see. Further down, we've got another Secret Invasion thing. This is the fourth issue of Secret Invasion in Humans, down in rank 44 at 41,152 units. This is implying they milked the Secret Invasion stuff maybe a little more than they should have. I would have expected that to, again, just based on Secret Invasion alone, to be a little higher. It'll be interesting to see how all these do as trades.
Well, you know, now that you bring up the T word, I think that's something that plays a factor here, because there's a lot of people that seem to, you know, oh yeah, you know, I'll just get a single trade of that entire miniseries if I hear that it was good. and that might be playing into, you know, the sale. I mean, I can't say definitively, although, you know, I don't want to get too far into Chris's territory here, but I did some analysis of the cost based on the latest round of solicits that are on the internet of what Marvel and DC and Image and Dark Horse are charging for their trades of new material. And Marvel charges per page substantially more than the other publisher. So the people who are buying the trades are, I think, Marvel noticed that and they say, oh, well, you know, here's an efficient way to get some money out of those people. We're going to, you know, they're charging like up around 18 cents a page in many cases, substantially more than you pay for the monthly issues.
Yeah. Well, I think part of what the publishers are almost literally banking on is that people don't do that kind of math on the comparative costs that often. And if they can establish, like they did for a while, the pattern of the trade being the better deal and kind of get that into people's heads, then people just assume the trade's always going to be the better deal and they can start slowly creeping the prices up there and make it not so much a better deal.
Yeah. The other fallacy is, you know, when people start hearing about this, oh yeah, comics are going up to $3.99. I'm going to just start buying the trades. Well, you know, your average trade right now costs $15 from Marvel. Guess what? When they start collecting $3.99 books, I can pretty much guarantee you that those $15 trades are going to be costing $20.
Or at least $18.99, or they're going to go up correspondingly. I agree with that.
I mean, Marvel has a lot of $19.99 trades even now, so I'm thinking that's the price point. You know, the $14.99 trade will become a $19.99 trade.
Yeah, as the cost of the component issues goes up, so goes the trade. I mean, that's pretty much just the way it works.
Marvel also seems to be, you know, when you look at some of these three-issue series that came out, like around Secret Invasion particularly. Ooh, gee, I managed not to say Civil War for once. That was good. They seem, at least from the solicits, to just be throwing some extra stuff into it because three issues is not particularly enough to make a satisfying chunk of a trade. So they just take some extraneous material and throw it in there to get it up to, 96 or 100 pages or so. So not only are you, you know, you're not getting a $9 trade that collects these three $2.99 issues, you're getting a, you know, $12.99 or $14.99 trade that collects those issues and has got some extra reprint from somewhere in the Marvel archives or some Who's Who pages or, you know, whatever, thrown in to pad them out, which again, if you've already got that material, you don't care about that other material, makes those trades an even less good deal than buying the individual issues.
Yeah, yeah. Have they solicited the Big Hero 6 trade?
Not sure.
Because I'm really curious what all is going to be in there, because they've had, that's been a $3.99 series, miniseries. And I felt they've been padding the back half of that. I mean, it was a 22-page story every issue with either a reprint or a prose story or whatever. And, you know, the first issue of, the first issue of that sold 13,022 units. The second issue, 8,408 units. The third issue, which is here down at rank 205, 6,291 units. And, you know, it's obviously going to continue to drop from there. This is one that, I mean, they've pretty much got to be losing money on. There's no reason to not put it into a trade. I'm just curious, are they going to include some of the additional back matter or not? Or, you know, how are they going to deal with that? But that's a definite case of, you know, the price didn't help it. And, you know, the fact that it felt very padded also, I think, hurt it. But I am surprised just how low it was selling. Let's see, what else do we got here that looks interesting? Superman, Supergirl, Maelstrom number 2 is down to 21,648 units. That's a drop of only about 10%, which isn't too bad, but again, kind of low. What titles look to be getting in towards that danger zone? Man, that Ghost Rider Danny Ketch issue 2, only 18,255 units. That's actually kind of surprising. I would have figured that would have done more. And we start getting into, and the funny thing is, we're only really at about this point starting to get below the rank 100. And by the time you hit rank 101 titles are selling under 21,000. So, I mean, the average book here is not doing all that great. And granted, for independent, these are great numbers. For Marvel DC, not so much. Definitely two different playing fields here.
Well, you can kind of see why they're going to be trying to squeeze their addicted fans into paying that much higher price.
Yeah.
They want to keep that revenue stream coming in.
Oh, totally. I mean, as the sales go down, the price has to go up. I mean, there are certain costs, printing, shipping, that are dependent on the number of units, but the bigger factor these days is creation cost. When you could leverage the cost of the art and the story across, you know, 100,000 copies, you could charge a lot less. When you're doing it across 10,000, 15,000 copies, you got to charge more.
I'm just curious as to how that's going to, in this economy, going to come back and backfire on them.
I'm thinking 2009 is going to be a very interesting and potentially very bumpy year for comics. Between the economy, the looming price hike, a lot of readers seeming to have a resistance to both the price hike and a fear of the economy and stuff. I mean, it's a bad combination.
Plus the growing dissatisfaction with some of these big events and all their spin-off miniseries that don't really pay off, you know, but that seems to be the business model of the big two right now, is, you know, away from just telling good stories in a continuing title, as opposed, you know, they're always doing these miniseries. Those are easier for someone to skip.
Oh, totally, totally. I think they're making big mistakes on both sides of the fence by doing things as miniseries. They should have a solid lineup of titles that is just, hey, I get this every month, and I don't need to think about it. Because if I'm not thinking about it, I'm not thinking about dropping it. You know, versus, do I want to pick up this side miniseries? Now I've got a decision to make. And there are two choices. Yes, I get it. No, I don't. So some people are going to say no. Whereas if this is just a regular issue of monthly you're always getting, you're always getting.
Exactly. Like this Batman, Fight for the Cowl, Quest for the Cowl, whatever they're calling it. You know, they've got a bunch of different miniseries spinning out around that. If that was just Batman,
yeah,
it wouldn't be a question. I get Batman. I'm going to get the next issue of Batman. Am I going to get the Batman Quest for the Cowl Commissioner Gordon one shot? No. Because I had to think about it exactly as you said. You know, if it was just, there's Batman, boom, I'm buying it.
Comics are a habitual purchase. And I've heard somewhere, I forget where, that it takes, you know, three times for something to even start to become a habit. You know, a three-issue miniseries, by the time it's even remotely a habit, by any sense of the definition, it's over. You know, whereas it takes one decision to drop a book. I think the way that these publishers are marketing their books, packaging their books, is conducive to people dropping titles and not continuing to get them. I think the fact that out of this list of 300, there were 11 reorders. For 56 of them, I couldn't find a previous issue. 40 of them were number ones, and some of them just didn't make the list before, what have you. 211 of them sold less than the previous issue. Only 22 sold more. This is standard. The total losses of issue over issue are over 444,000 units. The total gains were only 35,582 units, for a net loss of well over 400,000 units. Again, issue to issue, not month to month. And I think these publishers need to be thinking in terms of readers that go into the store either every Wednesday or every other Wednesday or whatever, or every reinforcing that habitual purchase, reinforcing the reward for continuing to get a series, not shifting the creative team, or at least not shifting the brand new direction with every creative team, what have you, and get people emotionally and financially invested in a title to where dropping it is emotionally hard for them to do, and they're not doing that. Because I look at these numbers, and we've been talking about these for, you know, a few years now, and every month, this is the same thing. More titles are dropping than going up. You know, you have a month like this where your big event titles don't ship, some of the other major titles don't ship, suddenly, you know, the total aggregate sales for the top 300 are down by, you know, a million units, a million and a half, or whatever. They need to rethink how they're marketing these books. They need to be expanding the readership, and at the very least, stabilizing the readership, keeping the readers they've got. You know, we're going into a year where I think both Marvel and DC are in interesting positions, more so for DC, because I think they're taking a few more chances story-wise with, like you were mentioning, the battle for the cowl and stuff like that. I mean, word is they're taking Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman essentially out of their own titles. And it's like, is this really the right time for that?
Yeah, actually, you make a really good point to refresh my memory on the Wonder Woman part, but, you know, Superman, they're pulling him out into space, they're sticking him in some side series, and Superman in Action are not going to have Superman in them. And Batman, of course, you know, did he die? Did he not die? You know, a little up in the air, whatever. But he's not going to be in the main Batman series for the foreseeable future. So what is the actual logic behind something like that? It makes little sense to me.
I mean, they need to do a cross between what we were talking about earlier with the Hulk and with Batman. With the Hulk, there's enough action and adventure. You feel you're getting something every issue. With Batman, there's a deeper story to be had, etc. You need to have titles these days that not only sell you on that title, but pre-sell you on the next issue. And there needs to be enough done in one of that installment, that package you get to feel, wow, I got some value for my money. And enough to not have a VN moment. There needs to be closure, but not conclusion. Again, you know, they're dropping the ball on this with the upcoming looming price hike that people are worried about, which I think is a very real fear. It does not seem good. I mean, I know I personally am going to be, you know, at least for the immediate term, cutting way back on my purchases. And, you know, I'm doing that for a number of reasons, not the least of which is currently being unemployed due to the current state of the economy. And, you know, it takes one reader like me to be cutting back, and I feel that's a little more noticeable than some other people necessarily doing it, because, I mean, out of this top 300, you know, I got 162 of them. Now, some of those are reorders that I'd already gotten, didn't get new this month, etc. But, you know, one person losing their job can start to have a ripple effect, particularly because it's not just one person. I know there are other people out there in similar boats. And when you've got titles selling 10, 15,000 as, you know, part of the DC universe or what have you, I mean, Blue Beetle, it's ending. Well, of course it is. It's selling 11,448 units. They can't sustain it at that. You know, same with Manhunter, just over 11,000 with 11,015 units. These companies need to think about what they can do to increase the value for the price they're asking, increase the retention of the readership, and increasing just, you know, readership in general. I think certainly, you know, we're going to see the December numbers, see how things are going, see what happens with that. But it's going to be very interesting to watch both the prices and the numbers for 2009. And on a quick note on the prices, 158 of the items on the list were at $299, 76 were at $399, and 33 were at $350. Everything else was in single digits. So, you know, about a quarter of the list is now at that $399 price, where just over half, $299. And the other thing I want to touch on real quick, and then I'm pretty much done with what I have to say, is I wanted to talk on the numbers for Gears of War, because that was one that we talked about a little last month. But, you know, how much did that really sell? Because reportedly, it sold 450,000 units, most of this seeming to be through the game stores and stuff. Took advantage of the final order cutoff, how many customers they turned away unhappy because they didn't have copies or whatever. Second issue, Through Diamond, sold 12,964 units. That's a 34.24% drop. That's much larger than the average second issue drop. And I really doubt we're going to see that do a major turnaround. You know, this is one where if people had gotten it through the game and said, oh, wow, I've just got to get more, we should have seen an increase in this, particularly since it came out on the 12th of November. There would have been time for reorders to get in.
Well, I mean, that goes right back to even if somebody got it in the game and liked it, those tie-ins generally do not have very explicit instructions on how to go about finding a comic book shop and getting another copy of it. And who knows how vigorously they were at, they did at putting that second issue into game shops.
Yeah.
Which is where the people would be looking for it, right? And that wouldn't be showing up on Diamond numbers anyway. Because I'm sure game shops are not going through Diamond.
True, but I'm not sure if the second issue is even available through game shops.
No, I agree. But what I'm saying is that if people got it in a game or in a game shop on the first issue, that's where they would logically want to get the second issue.
Oh, totally, totally.
Especially given that there's historically a lack of coherent pointing of people to local comic shop locations.
Yeah, yeah. Personally, not surprised by those numbers. And it really, you know, throws into question just how effective those kinds of projects are. Certainly, I think it's worth doing, but, you know, you're not going to save the industry that way.
I do think that, like, for instance, I'm looking at the bottom of the list here. I see Castle Waiting, issue 13, 2300. I love that series. The previous issue's 10, which tells me that when 11 and 12 came out, the months were big enough that the numbers that it's doing were not reported in the top 300. So it probably was, you know, around the same amount, you know, somewhere around 25, 2600, but many months that falls below the granularity that gets captured on this list.
Yeah.
Golly has dropped pretty substantial. Well, I don't know if it's dropped particularly, but it's got very low numbers, 2600. Not sure how long that's going to be around. Your I Hate Gallant Girl, that's very depressing for a first issue.
Yeah, well, I mean, a lot of these are just, I think some of it is they are getting pushed out. I think part of it with that one is just where it was solicited. The way they lay out the image section of previews, it almost seems like an afterthought for some of these things. But for, you know, 2,424 units, it's like, wow, you know, that's one that I think if Jim Valentino himself wasn't kind of behind in pushing, I don't think would have continued after that. But I mean, I know they got a second issue out.
And Boom Studios down here too. And these are actually a couple of, I bought both the Last Reign Kings of War that came in at $297 and Galveston came in at $299. Those are both very entertaining comics as far as I was concerned. And you know, the fact that they're way down there, I think a lot of shops just totally ignore the Boom in general.
Yeah, but, I mean, again, you've got a couple of image things down here.
You don't even have to look too far up there, 281, to see Proof, right, which is an image book. You know, there's lots of books down here that are just, you know, not non-Marvel DC books that are pretty decent books, and I just don't think they're making it out in front of people.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's just a question of how much of it is lack of demand, how much of it is lack of availability resulting in a lack of demand. You know, which is the chicken, which is the egg?
Well, I mean, you get back to our early point, you know, with people who aren't on the internet, who aren't doing that, and what kind of conversations they have in the comic shops. These are also the same kind of people that if they're not prowling around reading previews, reading the internet and stuff, they buy something that they can pick up, look at, and find interesting. And if these indie books are not present for them to pick up, look at, and find interesting, they are not going to sell by definition.
Well, yeah, I mean, totally. There's a lot of people who want to flip through the books and check out the art or whatever just to get more information on it before they decide to put their money down. And I totally understand that, and I think that's a smart move in a lot of cases. I do that often.
But, you know, this is the flaw to the non-returnable direct market, because I can completely understand a comic shop not wanting to tie up a lot of working capital in big piles of these books, because, you know, frankly, you know, for every Galveston, you know, to use an example, or Castle Waiting, which I find both of those to be highly entertaining series, you know, there are, and I can't even name them all, but, you know, there are lots of really squirrely independent books that have relatively unpolished looking art and poor production values, you know, bad editing. What was that one that we reviewed?
Wingman.
Yeah, Wingman. I mean, woo, you know, terrible, you know, and it's kind of a crapshoot for a shop owner. You know, am I going to get the good one? Am I going to get this other one? And for them to be having to make that decision, especially with the number of those books out there, boy, they could tie up a lot of money that's just totally lost if they bought even two copies of every one of these indie books that are in the back of the previews. There's so many of them.
Yeah, well, I mean, you could see that as a problem with the non-returnable direct market, and I certainly, you know, understand that, but I think it's as much a problem with the amount of information available to the people who are making the decisions on what to buy, both retailers and readers. Because if you have a decent sense of what the art's going to be like, some idea what the story is going to be like, and a little bit more to go on than a postage stamp size image of the cover, which is probably done by a different artist, paced, and, you know, 25 words or less for the description of the premise, that's not much to go on. If I were over at Diamond, there are a couple of things I would think about doing. First off, I'd expand this list beyond 300. I want to see what's below this and how much of this is just not visible because it's not on here, or, you know, just how well some of these other indies are doing, because I think that's where growth for the industry can happen. But I would change around how previews is working. I would take the offered again and the backlist items, I would pull them out into a quarterly catalog that's available for free with that previews every quarter, but slim down the main one and, you know, give more information. I would certainly beef up the Diamond website where retailers and readers are like, oh, I'm curious about this. Let me go see a little bit more and can get more information on these things. Because I do think that better information availability could certainly help on this.
Well, you know, realistically, I think you should not be able to solicit an issue until you've got at least 2 pages of interior continuity art camera ready. That's not unreasonable, and you need to provide those to Diamond. Because, you know, if you could go to the Diamond website, and I don't know how much Diamond would care to do this, or, you know, even if there was a link off the Diamond website, which I don't know that they're interested in doing that either. But if any of these books, if I could look at 2 to 3 pages of interior continuity art for that book, that would allow me to make a decision, an informed decision, and especially if I'm a retailer.
Certainly it would cost Diamond some money, bandwidth, storage space, etc., to have a website that did all of that. However, they're getting a piece of the pie for every comic sold, so every time that increases sales, they're benefiting from that. And if they can be increasing sales on these things at the bottom of the list, where there's clearly a lot more people walking into comic shops than are buying these things, they seem to have more to gain than to lose.
Yeah. And realistically, you know, having something like DCBS's First Light program, you know, a little bit more widely spread where both retailers and consumers can make an informed decision by being able to see some pages of interior art and not just the little postage stamp pinup of the cover, which is often very different from what you get inside the package.
Mm-hmm.
That would make people able to make that decision. Now, would retailers take advantage of that? I think the better ones would.
Yeah.
And would consumers? I mean, heck, you know, it's like even people who listen to this show, I mean, if you could go and look at pages of things that we talk about and say, oh, that looks like something I would like, that would give you a lot better notion on whether you want to sink your $2.99, $3.50, $3.99, whatever, into that book than just hearing a short paragraph description of what that book is about. Because lots of things have a great high concept and the execution is flawed.
Yeah. Yeah. I just think that kind of infrastructure would take a little bit of work to put together and stuff, but the benefits are potentially immense, because I would like to see these comic sales become a bit more of a meritocracy, if you will, of, you know, the things that are good and that the readership and retailers think have merit sell better. And, you know, I'm not totally convinced that's happening now.
Well, that's all I've got this month. I look forward to the next month's numbers. We should have the Secret Invasion conclusion in there, huh?
Yes, and the fifth Final Crisis issue. So we should have quite a bit there. So it should be a number of items above the 100,000 mark compared to this month. And it'll be interesting to see how Batman 682 did, which was the first part of the Final Crisis tie-in and stuff like that. Should be interesting. And then shortly after that, we should have the year-end numbers, and we'll take a look at that, too. I think that does it for this month, though.
Yep.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the Comic Book Page website. Please email us at themailreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.
The views expressed by Don Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If they differ from your reality, please verify that you are in the same space-time continuum before taking any action. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Diamond Comics Distribution for the monthly question. The Diamond Order Index only goes 2 decimal places, and therefore there is a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics is usually used as the key title. Some numbers are rounded to the nearest 100 for convenience. This may introduce a further level of inaccuracy. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied. Anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activity should be seen only as indications there is at least one retailer that may have an excessive amount of empty shelf space with dust that needs collecting. The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 different comic books may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of top 300 comic books for the month. The list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions only contains the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 100 different graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of top 100 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, the list of top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 50, 25, or a few scanned items. This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time that you look. Fixing this may require time travel, which, as far as I know now, has not been successfully invented in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales of any comic books, graphic novels, and or collected editions that are not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 100 graphic novels and collected editions lists is included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. No information about the sales or lack of sales of any items sold outside the Diamond Comics distribution channel is included, implied, or denied. That information is considered to be outside the scope of this report. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for, and no amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer's here, then it probably isn't meant for you. This report is void in the ultimate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Ath, logic, and the English language itself seem to work very differently there.